For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, to which you should subscribe on your way to hitting the donate button if you haven't already done both, and with greetings and thanks to viewers in India who've made it number 30 on our list of all-time views by jurisdiction. I won't play Mr. Dress-Up like our former Prime Minister, even to the extent of mistaking Namaste for a universal greeting in a country with over 100 major languages, including one scheduled one called Canada that has more native speakers than the country called Canada has people, and nearly 20,000 dialects. I'm just glad you're watching. Please keep it up. Meanwhile, here at CDN, we're among those seeing red over a major new climate report from the U.S. Department of Energy, released on July 23rd and written by five authors, including our latest webinar guest, Stephen Koonin. But where alarmists are seeing red in the sense of being angry that a distinguished group of climate scientists, a term here meaning people with PhDs in clearly relevant fields and a lot of career experience on the topic, have dared to say that the science is not settled and that much that journalists say experts say is not happening at all, we are seeing red in the sense of seeing the long-needed red team that Koonin himself has long advocated, offering contrary opinions to conventional wisdom that had become smug and obnoxious, as well as wildly inaccurate. As John Stuart Mill wrote in On Liberty, quote, "He who knows only his own side of the case knows little of that. His reasons may be good, and no one may have been able to refute them. But if he is equally unable to refute the reasons on the opposite side, if he does not so much as know what they are, he has no ground for preferring either opinion. Nor is it enough that he should hear the opinions of adversaries from his own teachers, presented as they state them and accompanied by what they offer as refutations. He must be able to hear them from persons who actually believe them," end quote. So, alarmists should stop trying to shout the red team down and start paying attention. As should Canadian politicians and business executives, too many of whom chickened out of debating the science at all and now say it's too late. It's not too late to correct an error. It almost never is. And here especially, it's important because Canada's government is ramping up spending by millions of dollars to inflict climate propaganda on children. To quote, empower young Canadians to address climate change, end quote. Which might seem unremarkable, but it actually deserves mention because as we said in May, quote, the new federal administration of Mark Carney is at once committed to net zero and obliged to revive the economy after a lost decade of sluggish productivity, weak investment, and minimal real wage growth. It will be an interesting demonstration project to see how they try to do it and what results, end quote. And apparently, what they're trying to do is change course while holding steady and speed up project approvals by erecting even more barriers because they're unable to prevail in the fight against their most dangerous foe, their own ideas. In the newsletter, we also say told you so about a Scientific American story, quote, mysterious illness decimating sea stars finally identified, end quote, that says, quote, a devastating bacterium that has decimated populations of sunflower sea stars, predators that play a key role in their environment. And the reason it's a told you so is that back in 2021, we criticized a spate of media tales along the lines of, quote, climate change wiping out billions of sea stars study, end quote, saying that anyone reading the stories with open eyes would see that it wasn't climate change, but a mysterious disease, and, all together now, sea stars evolved in a much warmer world, and they don't like cold. So, did scientific alarmism note that the climate panic was a mistake once the mysterious disease was unmasked as Vibrio pectinicida? Heck no. They doubled down with, quote, researchers are unsure of where this bacterium came from and why it broke out. But there is evidence that warmer ocean temperatures are linked to bigger outbreaks. And that suggests that temperature and possibly even climate change might affect this disease, end quote. But it's no mystery where Vibrio came from. People write papers on it and they have for years. The only mystery is why climate science isn't like the other kind where hypotheses get tested and, if refuted, get rejected. In a similar widely published piece of reportaganda, AFP catalogues the difficulties of taking blood samples from polar bears, not the other way around, and of course says warming in the Svalbard archipelago is happening, quote, 3 to 4 times faster than elsewhere, end quote, leaving the precise location of elsewhere for you to guess at. And, since the ice is melting, the polar bears can't hunt seals as much as they used to, except that, the lead scientist at the Norwegian Polar Institute Polar Bear Program says, quote, even if they only have 3 months to hunt, they can obtain about 70% of what they need for the entire year during that period. That's probably why we see they are doing okay and are in good condition, despite, and then AFP adds, lest it cause confusion, quote, the huge melting of the ice, end quote. So, can we relax? No, of course not. Because, quote, if warming reduces their seal hunting further, perhaps they will struggle, he warned. They are doing better than we feared. However, there is a limit, and the future may not be as bright, end quote. As usual, piling if on may to turn confusion into certainty, and a story about the bears being fine into a story about the bears being in trouble, is what you expect, but it's not what you should get. And another thing. When the story isn't directly about climate, reporters do have a way of forgetting their lines. All excited about the discovery of the remains of a British frigate that had fought in the American Revolutionary War, and earlier against New France, the Washington Post let off, quote, ferocious winter storms are not unusual on the remote island of Sandy, jutting off Scotland's northern coast, end quote. And one of these evidently drove the former HMS Hind, by this point a private whaling ship, onto a reef in March 1788. What? They had bad weather before climate? Chronically? Then there's a CBC piece that bellows, quote, a new study suggests extreme weather caused by climate change is disrupting more and more large events like festivals and sports, end quote. But the data clearly shows that extreme weather is not getting worse, and even the IPCC does not claim that it is. Also, climate change isn't something that causes weather to change. It's a statistical description of long-term changes in the weather. Other than that, fine journalism from the Canadian state propaganda outfit that has, the Canadian Taxpayers Federation recently noted, quote, more than 250 directors, 450 managers, 780 producers, 130 advisors, 81 analysts, 120 hosts, 80 project leads, 30 lead architects, 25 supervisors, and, quote, 200 mystery people, end quote, all paid over $100,000 a year. But none of them, apparently, are being paid to do proper fact-checking. Ah, and speaking of extreme weather, Ottawa had enough smoky hours in 2025 to reach 10th place overall in under 8 months. So, climate change caused more wildfires, gotcha, right? Wrong. The top year is 2023, and then, 1955, 1953, 1956, 1957, 1958, 1962, 1954, and 1959. We're not really sure why the 1950s were a constant blaze, but the minimum years, with no smoky days at all, include 1990 to 2001, 2003 to 9, 2011 to 12, 2014 to 22, and 2024. So, climate change appears to be stopping wildfires. Cool. Oh, and the year with the most days over 30 degrees Celsius in Ottawa? That'd be 1955, followed by 1906. Terrible. Also in the newsletter, on the subject of green lash, we note that California Governor Gavin Newsom, who's long been a poster politician for climate change extremism, regardless of the impact of his policies on real people, is suddenly begging the oil industry not to flee from the Golden State that he long tried to drive it out of. Why is he doing so? Because the blithe promises that he long made that alternatives could do the job did not pan out. Likewise, The Economist, recognizing growing popular opposition to madcap climate policy, recently argued, quote, that in the face of immovable politics, climate policy should instead focus on the art of the possible, end quote. A brilliant idea. That beats the art of the impossible. But it still requires delving into two vexed questions. What actually is possible, and do their green fellow travelers know or care? The Economist insists that, quote, a politics of new possibilities can put climate policy on a more sustainable footing, as well as offering hope, end quote, which sounds like politician rhetoric, to be honest. From our point of view, such a conclusion should come after the demonstration, not before it. And we also note that the Atlantic Weekly Planet just sneered, quote, America is living in a climate denial fantasy, end quote. So, to return to John Stuart Mill, A critical component of a convincing, or at least plausible, argument is the refutatio. That's the part where you acknowledge your adversary's case, show that you understand it, and attempt to rebut it. If you skip this part, sensible members of the audience will conclude either that you don't know the contrary case and are a fool, that you do know it and are ducking it because you can't answer it and are a knave, or you're some queasy mix of the two. Despite which, there is a remarkable tendency nowadays for climate alarmists, a category that does include much of the press, to regard climate change as so conclusively settled that checking actual facts is for losers. For instance, in response to a CNN piece shrilling, quote, "extreme weather caused by climate change is raising food prices worldwide, study says," end quote, Ryan Maury posted, quote, "recent droughts or heat waves are not unprecedented. In 1877, 4% of the Earth's population died due to a famine induced by worst drought in past 250 years or longer," end quote. But the journalists never checked, any more than they checked whether climate change was a causal force or a statistical description. Oh, and Chris March just fired back at some alarmist psychologist asking, quote, "why do farmers keep voting for a party that is determined to ignore climate change," end quote, with a chart of global crop yields that are rising steadily and spectacularly. Not in response to the other guy's data, because that guy had none. What he had was an assumption and an attitude. In the newsletter, we also continue our Have It Both Ways series by looking at Earth's rotation. If the days sometimes seem to drag on, well, in 2005, the model said that global warming would cause that rotation to slow down and the days would get longer, though only by about a millionth of a second a year, which is too small to measure unless it lasted a century or so. But if instead time seems to be flying by, well, we only had to wait 2 years for a new team to run their model and show that global warming will mean the Earth's rotation speeds up. We say not so fast. Or slow. Or hot. Because of all the threats caused by climate change, one of the scariest, or so we're told, is the soaring numbers of people who will die during scorching heat waves. And yes, heat waves are unpleasant, and they can be dangerous, especially to people who can't take countermeasures. But human beings aren't that dumb, and they do look for ways to make their lives safer and more pleasant, including installing air conditioning and making changes to their homes like painting the roof white, planting shade trees, and closing the curtains. Are they nevertheless doomed fools? Not according to a new study by a group of scientists in Poland, who say that on average every 17.9 years, Europeans adjust enough to negate the impact of 1 degree Celsius of warming. And, since global warming for the last 100 years has only allegedly added about 2 degrees Celsius, that finding means that over 4 decades, European adaptation outpaced climate change. Government policy didn't help. In fact, it not only didn't help, if anything, it got in the way. If only drawing the curtains kept bureaucrats and politicians out. Finally, speaking of India, the CO2science.org archive says that Indian goosegrass, also known as wiregrass, silver crabgrass, Eleuchina indica L. Gerton, or that wretched weed again, likes CO2. Between 1984 and 2006, 6 experiments showed that an extra 300 parts per million of atmospheric CO2 resulted in an average 34% more growth, and 2 studies showed an extra 600 parts per million meant 48.5% more growth. So, its allegedly edible seeds will be available if you get desperate due to climate change. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I like to keep an open mind. Open at both ends, mind you. Thank you.